Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm joined here today, as per always, by my WhatsApp wife, Faith Richardson.
You truly get better every week. I'm so happy.
How has your weekend been so far?
It's been all right, sort of relatively uneventful. There's been a lot of Zoom quizzes, a lot of trying to do creative-y, crafty things, but not really getting very far with anything. It's been one of those kind of weekends. And obviously on Friday, I thought it was a bank holiday, and not until the end of the day when my mother informed me that it was not. So I spent the whole day looking stupid.
No, but apparently tomorrow is a bank holiday. So I went to the supermarket today and stocked up because I'm at the ends of my vegetable box.
Have you been making any more sad meals?
So yesterday was quite sad. I think I had about 6 slices of toast just sort of spread out over the course of 12 hours, which was a bit depressing. At one point, I did put, and this might horrify you or you might be really down with it, I had some leftover Black Forest ham. I had some roast chicken. So then I did one layer of horseradish sauce, ham, chicken, and then cranberry sauce on top, just in like white toast and a bit of black pepper.
I mean, to be fair, I'm not really keen on cranberry sauce or horseradish. However, as an idea, I actually think it sounds exceptional.
It was very good. I mean, it was kind of like the dregs of a roast dinner.
Yeah. It's certainly better than the one corn sausage you had that time. So,
you know, actually, my lunch today has been an iced coffee, corn cocktail sausages, a tub of hummus and some chocolate covered peanuts.
Incredible. I made some of those like pot break like bread rolls. You know, you just throw them in the oven and it's like you've made bread but haven't.
What? No.
Oh my god, you can get them from like Asda and all sorts. They're literally like part baked, so you just put them in the oven. They're basically like fully formed and everything. It's kind of just like last 10 like, minutes.
like a baguette that you warm up.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I had some of those and some pesto hummus, which was delightful.
That does actually sound really good.
So I outdid myself today because usually I'm the same. I'm like, bit of toast, or I kind of just think the idea of food just sounds like hard work, so I'm just like, I'll just do it later.
I'm really upset that over this lockdown I haven't discovered a desire to cook or a desire to like exercise and better myself in any way, physically or mentally.
Honestly, if you're thriving as you are, then there's no need to.
I'm actually very happy. Like, I think obviously the annoying thing is like having the freedom taken away from you, but I've realized that, like, you know, I'm like 80% functional and like, yeah. I'm not like struggling, you know, like it's fine. It's frustrating for sure, but I'm not like genuinely distressed by it.
No, I'm exactly the same. I'm more just fed up. Like, I'm just bored of the novelty of it now rather than anything else.
Yeah, this is why I keep like aggressively just dancing in my kitchen because I just need to work that energy off somehow.
I mean, you can count that as your exercise. That's definitely a form of exercise.
It is, and I just wanted to make sure that I could still shake my ass because it's been a while. I wanted to make sure my hips still had the same range of movement they always have.
Getting motion training ready for when this is all over.
What do you think about Dominic Cummings as well?
Oh, I just hate him. I just loathe him as a human being and as a concept of a man.
So for any American, German or Indian listeners, because we have people in all of those places now, basically one of our top government officials, what is even his title? Like, I don't even know, which is
awful. Don't know. Just floater, Klingeron.
One of our top government officials decided to break lockdown multiple times, travel hundreds of miles while he was symptomatic with COVID to go and visit his elderly parents. And then take his kids out on a day trip as well. So that's great. What I'm worried about is now the government's completely undermined their own messaging. So, you know, like I say, we said last time, people like us, we're like goody two shoes. We're not going to flout, you know, rage against the machine in any way. But there are people out there that are now going to be like, well, how can they tell us what to do if they're not even listening to it? And this is now their like green light to go and just do whatever, you know?
Exactly. It's just so frustrating. And I was talking to my friend who lives in America, and she's saying it's the same there, where she is the manager of like a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And so they're open to serve coffee and food, but nobody's allowed to like sit inside, and they've got to keep social distancing and all that. And some woman screamed at her that she was abusing her constitutional right by not letting her sit inside.
That is awful. Okay, the other thing that I don't understand about these Americans that are so like het up about all of this, aren't these the same people that are like survivalists, you know?
Yeah, like doomsday preppers.
Ready for the apocalypse. Yeah. The rapture's coming. And then when you're actually like, right, guys, batten down the hatches, some shit's about to go down, they all start whinging like babies because they can't get a cafe latte.
It is. It's all like the doomsday preppers who have like pantries full of food and an underground bunker and things. And then they've been told that, you know, hey, there's some pretty serious shit in the air. Shouldn't really go outside. And like, you won't tell me what to do. I only bunker down when I think it's appropriate.
Oh, it's literally, it's insane. And I saw someone that did a very poignant tweet about it that said, what was it? I was just like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I try not to tweet anything like political, but sometimes I can't help myself because... Okay, someone said, if you think wearing a mask is stressful, ask a kindergartner how active shooter drills feel.
Oh my God, that's so terrifying when you think about it.
And isn't that true? Because these are all the same people that are pro-NRA, you know.
Yeah, all very into the guns and their, you know, their rights to own guns and bear arms and all that.
I mean, I would be very upset if my rights to go and shoot up a school were infringed by any government. You know, that's just needless authoritarianism.
That's just being a sheeple following the crowd.
Oh God, don't. I've also been in a QAnon black hole this morning. It's not good. I love a conspiracy, but then I get to a point where like I can't even read about it for the fun because, you know, there are like lifestyle bloggers posting this stuff on their stories now, and it's just,
oh my God, like, no. Is this the same thing where it's like it's because of 5G, and then if you add like the however many letters there are in the alphabet to the number 5 or something, and it'll spell out COVID or whatever it is?
Oh, no. I love like a really obscure, like, then if you say this backwards, then it kind of sounds like Satan, and obviously Satan is the guardian of hell, and
it's just,
and if you go to Bible verse 19C.
It's just such a stretch, and I love people that don't even feel bad about the stretch that they put into this.
it's just such selective reality, isn't it? And it's just like, it must be really nice to be that intellectually arrogant to just feel like you can disregard
everything.
Fact, you know.
Stone cold facts.
To be like, just found out about facts, thanks, not for me.
Not today, thank you.
Oh, but anyway, some light in the darkness, I think.
Absolutely, you have to laugh.
Although, so Roni, this ep was a good episode. Do you know what? It actually felt right for like Sunday morning viewing.
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't too heavy or too sort of like intense happenings.
The pace was good.
Yeah, I agree. And like I say, I think it's like a nice like filler episode where it kind of like it's laying the groundwork and it's kind of it moves the storyline along, but without like too much stuff happening.
Yeah. We open up with Leah and Luann meeting for lunch. They're kind of in like an outdoor setup. It did look kind of stressful sitting for an alfresco lunch when the pavement is like super busy. There's like a fire truck in the background.
I know, I always have this thing with like alfresco dining in New York where it's like it seems like such a lovely idea to, you know, sit outside and get some fresh air and stuff like that, but there is only so much pavement that is actually allowed in that city, and the idea of just sitting while people are like rushing past the shopping bags in like arm's reach is too much for me.
Yeah, and you'd get like wafts of just smog.
Yeah, and just like traffic fumes and all the background noise.
Oh, my chest hurts just thinking about it. So they've both woken up with coughs. And honestly, it made me nostalgic for a time where like a cough was just like, oh, did you drink a bit much last night? You know, not some kind of abject death sentence.
Yeah, like I even caught myself thinking, oh, I wonder if they had corona before it was even a thing.
They're such trendsetters.
Yeah, so ahead of the curve.
Literally ahead of the curve. Yeah.
Been there, done it, had it and recovered.
So Leah's like, last week that was just too much, that was a shit show. And we get a throwback to to the ladies in the minivan on the way back from the orchard, and Sonia just throwing up more or less directly onto Tinsley's feet.
I mean, if there was one person on that bus that would have been the worst choice to be sick on, it was definitely Tinsley. I can't imagine she handled it at all well.
I'm actually surprised that Tinsley didn't hold a grudge from that and pull it into this week.
Yeah, that could have so easily been a thing. Like, you did it on purpose, you aimed for me. I mean, I'm surprised that Sonia didn't go old school and, like, just do it into a handbag.
Yeah, although maybe now that financially she's in a bit, yeah, more, a bit more stress, she didn't want to kind of permanently damage the Birkin. Lest she need to resell it at a later date.
Oh god, but this was just such a classic sort of like aftermath of that trip, wasn't it? I mean, that trip, it said a lot during this episode, but that trip was just a shit show from start to finish.
It was pretty wild. Most people were misbehaving.
Yeah, and I'm kind of sad that, like, I thought this episode would have kind of followed on from it a little bit and we'd have seen a little bit more of the trip, so I'm kind of sad that the one episode was all that we got of it.
Yeah, but I mean, this is, in a way, it's what I like about New York, because it is super fast paced. And I think any other show, we'd have seen that trip back, right, with Sonia being sick, and we'd have seen more of it. I think there must be so much content to this season, yeah, that they kind of, you know, that was almost just like an addendum.
Yeah, that's true. And it's like they couldn't leave it out, so they had to sort of like refer to it, but it wasn't enough to warrant like a full portion of an episode.
It does make me hopeful for what's
coming. It's a good omen, I think.
So parallel to this dinner with, or this lunch with Luann, Leah and Tinsley, you have Ramona, Dorinda and Sonia that are at a fairly kind of lo-fi yoga class. And Ramona's like, this is Birkin. She's helped transform my body. Birkin is a really chic name.
It is. I was really into that name. I really liked it.
So my dad wanted to call me Paris. Right. Because that's where I was conceived.
Lovely.
Which I always thought was quite romantic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Until one day I found out that it wasn't like some stunning hotel just off the Champs-Élysées on their honeymoon, but it was actually Euro Disney.
Stop!
In Marne-la-Vallée, about a 45-minute train journey out of the centre. And not only that, they were taking my half-sister because my dad, it was like my dad's weekend to like have custody of. So I was literally made in Euro Disney.
Incredible. I love that for you. It really encompasses all your personality, I feel.
It's so un-me that it's me, because like I'm not a Disney person.
No, I'm not either. It's like so you, because it's so perfectly ironic.
I don't know, like Paris Gertrude Rogers, like,
yeah. It doesn't really ring quite as nicely, does it?
No, I don't think so.
Oh god.
But yeah, I like the name Birkin.
Yeah, I do as well. I'm going to remember that one. I'll probably call a small dog in at some point in the future.
Oh, yeah. And she was very chic as well. She had, like, shaved head and...
Yeah.
Very cool.
I was quite surprised that she was, like, Ramona's trainer of choice. I would have thought Ramona would have gone for either a really hot guy or some slightly older woman who was very much into, like, the Jane Fonda method.
Yeah, actually, I did think that. It felt like a bit of, like, When Worlds Collide.
Yeah. Like, you can tell that they are not from the same universe.
No. But maybe that's why they can just meet in this neutral kind of yoga zone and then, yeah, it's fine. But if Ramona saw her in the outside world, she'd like clutch her purse closer to her person.
Yeah. Or she'd be one of those ones where she just kind of goes, what's her name again? I can't remember. I did think Sonia arriving late and just asking if it was over yet was a mood.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, Sonia, bless her for even turning up.
I know. I was so surprised that she actually showed up. I would have thought she would have bailed.
I loved her little pigtails.
I did as well. God love her. She always commits to, like, a theme. I'm always like this whenever I get dressed. Wherever I'm going, whatever I'm doing, I always, like, think of, like, a theme or kind of, like, a look in my head. And I'm just like, right, this is what I'm going for today.
Yeah, and you commit.
Yeah.
Sonia is getting confronted about her drinking. And the thing is, it's like, yeah, she got sloppy and messy, but no one is saying anything to Dorinda. I mean, Dorinda even goes, yeah, what were you shouting at Tinsley about? I was like, excuse me?
That was just such a kind of like double take moment where she's like, yeah, why were you shouting at her? And it's like, I'm sorry, what planet were you on and what trip were you on?
They're completely kind of picking and choosing what they see. And at this point in the episode, I was like, right, okay, here's the chasm forming. We're going to have, you know, Sonia, Dorinda and Ramona on one camp, and we're going to have the others in the other.
That
and
was exactly what's interesting what they- is
that didn't even last the length of the episode, really.
So that was literally exactly what I thought as well. And I've even written down that, like, I think we're starting to see the kind of the divide, and we're starting to see, like, the usually, you know, obviously the reunion, they sit on their, like, respective sofas of their teams. So I was like, oh, this is happening, this is what's going to happen. And yeah, didn't even make it to the end of the episode.
Well, there was that arbitrary makeup at Ramona's place, but it always just feels like, and they talk about this, like, at the Russian baths, it always just feels like a ceasefire. It never feels like a resolution, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's such an important
peace treaty. They never thrash it out, like, right up until the end.
Yeah, and I think that's such, like, an important distinction as well. Like, they think just because they say, like, we're not going to talk about it anymore, that, like, it's squashed. And it's like, it's not. You're both still harboring resentment. You're just agreeing not to talk about it, which is still just as unhealthy.
It's just like, yeah, just internalize it until one day you have a complete meltdown prompted by one too many glasses of Rioja.
Exactly.
So then we go back to the lunch. Everyone's coughing. Tinsley arrives. She's coughing. It's all very stressful to watch, I think, with, you know, just with the knowledge that we have now.
I know. I wonder whether they left that in as a kind of, like, sort of fourth wall nod to the fact of what's happening, or whether it never even occurred to them that this would be seen as such a weird thing now.
Oh, no, that's probably, they probably did, you know, because they were probably editing this as things were starting to ramp up.
Yeah, I imagine it was probably like, yeah, we'll just leave this in. It's like a fun little thing, little nod.
And then Leah's kind of trying to explain to Tinsley how to deal with Dorinda. And, like, Leah does, she goes a bit tangential here. So she's got some interesting lingo being used in the testimonial. Then she suggests that Tinsley is to thug Dorinda out.
Which is truly just the least Tinsley scenario that I could ever imagine.
Tinsley's expression summed up exactly how I felt about this. Like, excuse me? You want me to do what?
Tinsley doesn't even know what that means. You can tell that was just completely above her head, above her knowledge.
Do you know what it means?
I mean, I think I understand it as like a theory, but not enough to put it into words. Like, I think she kind of means in the same way that she did in like that first episode with Dorinda, where she was just like calling the bullshit straight away and having none of it, was probably what I think she meant. But I think she means like Tinsley should go at her in quite an aggressive way, which, as we know, just would not work.
Yeah, and again, this had shades of La La, where it's kind of like, you're a white girl, like, please don't do this.
It just doesn't translate.
Don't need to do this.
No.
So Luann kind of chides Tinsley for her default kind of reaction, being shrieking like a toddler, and Tinsley's like, that's just me.
That's just my personality.
The thing is, like, we've spoken about this before, Tinsley definitely romanticizes childhood, and that probably explains why she has these habits or these responses that feel or look very infantile.
Yeah, there's not a very sort of like adult kind of response to things, and it is like just her default way of talking when she's like frustrated or feels attacked or whatever, is just to go in this kind of like whingy, shrieky kind of response. And I do agree that, like, when Tinsley said, like, but that's my reaction to what she's doing, so I don't know why I'm the one being picked on. Like, I do agree with that. Like, it's just annoying that that's her response.
Yeah, I think Luan was being a bit unnecessary because, you know, it was not like it's unprovoked. And also, Dorinda uses very childish kind of mocking tones a lot of the time as well in these confrontations.
Yeah, like, she behaves just as childishly, and she does it in a way where she's trying to make it come across like she's being really funny, but it just comes across as, like, poor taste and, like, bullying and kind of, like, high school sort of behaviour.
Yeah, it's very distasteful. And then Ramona calls it out in a testimonial, very kind of on the ball, where she's like, Dorinda's picking on Tinsley, but then she fails to confront her to her face, at least at this point in the episode. And, like, do you think the other women are scared of Dorinda?
Yeah, I do as well. I think Ramona is so used to being the one that can just say things and people kind of have a little bit of a blow up with her and that's just it. Whereas I think she knows that that's not how Dorinda is going to roll with her, like, as we see. Like, I think Ramona's used to the one that just sort of has, like, word vomit and says things without thinking about it. So she's kind of scared to go toe-to-toe with Dorinda, if that makes sense.
Yeah, she's kind of used to being quite untouchable. Or I think she's at a point where Ramona knows that she can say things and people will get pissy, but eventually just be like, oh, that's just Ramona.
Yeah, she's almost, like, created it as, like, her personal brand, where it's like, oh, it's just a Ramonaism. Like, I wouldn't think too much about it.
Yeah, and I think she does, because she has those moments of genuine warmth as well, it kind of balances out a bit more.
Yeah, like, Ramona manages to be incredibly likable whilst also just being
appalling.
But appalling. It's quite an impressive bridge to gap, like, gap to bridge, sorry. Bridge to gap? I've lost all grasp of the English language now.
Do you think that Leah's assessment that Dorinda is jealous of her upbringing is an accurate one?
I actually do. And I think we kind of mentioned this a little bit last week as well, didn't we? Where we were saying, I think it is just that Dorinda, like, had this life with Richard and then hasn't really had it again and had somebody that's, like, taking care of her. And she knows she's always, like, stable and secure. Whereas Tinsley, like, always has that without even trying, because it comes from family rather than marriage.
Yeah, and maybe fails to seem particularly grateful for it at times.
Yeah, it's like, it's so expected that she doesn't even really register that it's a kind of privilege that she has.
Yeah, and I agree, where she's like, don't judge me, don't judge me. Like, I get it, you should judge someone on how they treat you, not on what they have or where they've come from. But I think I can see how it would rub people the wrong way if she was constantly doing the woe is me act, which she does tend to do.
Yeah. No, I do agree with that assessment. I think it is, like, if I was around her all the time and I was somebody, like, Dorinda's not, like, struggling, like, let's be clear, she's not, like, hard up or, like, finding it difficult with money or anything, and especially not the same way that, like, maybe Sonia has and stuff, but I do think I would find it particularly grating, no matter how comfortable or well off or secure I was. I would find it really grating that somebody wasn't grateful for that situation that they're in.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you're just not in that position.
Yeah, exactly.
So they all laugh off the idea of an intervention, and then Luan suggests the setting of a spa day, presumably to try and offset some of the aggressiveness. I don't know, maybe she thinks get them in for a massage or kind of work out the kinks in more ways than one.
I know, and I do understand, because it's like, it's a naturally calm setting and everybody's a little bit more peaceful and they're, you know, being spoiled a little bit, so they're hopefully going to be in a better mood. But didn't work.
No, and then Luan trying to work with a Cardi B reference killed me. She's going to gangster rap on your head. It sounds like my mum. Oh my god, my mum. So, you know, the Black Eyed Peas.
Mm-hmm.
Remember them? Like, they haven't been a thing for like 10 years, but
yeah, but they had their heyday.
My mum calls him Will Eatum.
Oh, that's such like a mumism, isn't it?
I know, she just thinks it's a natural pause. She's like, oh yes, that Will Eatum was the one show. He's very clever. He's doing some things in financial technology. he actually was an investor in an online bank based in Durham, you know?
Seriously?
Yeah. So, he legit came to Newcastle Uni. I missed him. But then he also went on like a tour of the Durham office, which is just wild.
Oh, my God. What a bizarre choice, though.
Yeah, it seems strange. I think he's had like a string of failed business ventures.
Trying his hand in the northeast of England.
Mate, none of us can make any money here. You're the exception.
Have at it. You can try your best, but we're all struggling.
Our economy functions exclusively on trebs, and now we can't even get those. Trebs and kebabs.
Oh, God.
Oh, we're laughing, but it's true.
I know, it's so fully true.
So then Dorinda goes to her life coach. Look, I want to know, what's your hot take on life coaches?
I mean, for me, I'd rather just see a therapist. Like, I think life coaches is for people who don't want to confess that they're in therapy.
Yeah, this is the thing. So I can call myself a life coach like tomorrow. Like, you don't need a single qualification.
Yeah, you can literally just be like, oh, I'm quite good at giving people advice. Here we go. Put a piece of paper on the wall. I'm a life coach.
Also, I assumed when she got there that she was at a Botox clinic. Like, that's what it looked like.
Oh my God, I literally wrote down, like, it looked so clinical. And like, if the across the desk setting was really bizarre. Like, I wouldn't any kind of like therapy or otherwise, where it was like you would have that kind of conversation across a desk.
Oh God, yeah, that's true, actually. It's almost like she was in there just for a quick consultation. And then also, Dr. Daryl, so he's supposedly a doctor, he's wearing scrubs with like a monogram. Did you notice that? He had like a little Dr. Daryl on his chest. And it's like, why are you in a uniform? You're a life coach.
Oh my God, I completely missed that. This is literally just like rich white people shit, isn't it?
It is. And I also noted that Dr. Daryl has some very rogue accoutrement in his office. So there was some kind of biblical tablet slab on his bookshelf, something that looked like a bottle of lube a few shelves up, and then one of those healing Himalayan salt lamps. But in spite of that, it still just had like the look and feel of an aesthetics clinic. So I've just decided that he's moonlighting as a life coach to like diversify his revenue streams.
He's probably doing it as a way to like lure in new clients as well, because once they're there, I'll be like, by the way, if you're ever in the mood for some Botox or maybe some lip filler, you can also do that.
Yeah, hooks you in with life coaching, convinces you that the source of all your problems is actually your crow's feet, and that's very easily remedied.
We've sussed his business plan in like 2 seconds flat.
We see you, Dr. Daryl. We see what you're doing.
Also, just Dr. Daryl, just
Daryl is like a name that I don't think anyone's been given since the early 80s.
No, I fully agree. I think Daryl Hannah is the only person in the world that's ever pulled off the name Daryl, and everything after that has just been a pale imitation.
So they kind of start having a bit of a conversation. He's asking her what's going on. And she's sort of doing that thing, you know, when you answer job interview questions about your flaws by making them into a positive. It's like, I think the reason it gets me so upset is because I want people to do well, you know, and I'm just really sad that she isn't thriving. And then that frustrates me.
It's like bullshit, straight up bullshit. It's like you say, like when you're in a job interview and they're like, oh, what's your worst trait? And you're like, I think I'm almost too organized.
Yeah.
Or the perfectionist. It's the classic. And the worst thing is, though, is they both genuinely like apply to me, where I'm like obsessively compulsive when it comes to organization. And I get too bothered about things being perfect. So technically they're true, but I'm also very aware that I can't say them in interviews because it's such a fucking cop-out. But I also can't be like, oh, I can't be asked to work between the hours of 9 a.m. and midday.
Yeah, you see, I think my main flaw would be like, I'm not a team, like, I'm incapable of working in a team.
Yeah, this is very much me as well. It's why I work home alone without other people around me.
It's so good. This is why I like the uni as well, because, you know, I work to a set curriculum, but like I get a lot of agency within that. So if I have to write a lecture, they'll just be like, can you come up with something around this? And then I basically just go free form and it's great. So
that is the best thing. Yeah, I hate anything that's like group projects. Group projects make my skin crawl more than anything on this planet. They're a terrible idea.
Our fault, everyone else is so incompetent.
I know. And then you just end up carrying them and then you just feel twice as irritated because you've basically done everything and they've just taken the credit for it.
Yeah, and then everyone gets the same grade. However, I do think that doing those in uni is like good preparation for the real world.
Yeah. The disappointment of other people, you mean?
Yeah. Just across the board, romantically, and professionally. Familial. The scene started off kind of like, oh, right, yeah, Dorinda, you just care too much. And then it did kind of get a bit redemptive because you start to remember that all of this comes from a place of loss. And, you know, the mourning that she never really gave herself a chance to go through because she was raising a child and trying to kind of keep it all together. So I find myself so, I got so seduced by her in this moment and empathy.
1000% agree with you. I was literally, it was so weird, like when she's so vulnerable and honest, like I've warmed to her so much and like I find her so relatable and I'm like, oh, I do understand, like I do get where you're coming from and like that is a really hard thing and like this, that and the other. And then she just goes so 180 awful and it just so like turns me off her personality.
I don't understand why she can acknowledge this in this setting, but she can't see it when she's actually enacting some of that behavior. I don't know if it's the alcohol that contributes to that lack of self-awareness.
Yeah, that's probably quite a big factor in it. And I also think as well, it's like she's talked relentlessly about this house and the stress and stuff that's put her under, but she's always made it sound like it's just the actual like physical renovation of the house. Obviously here we got to hear her say that it's because it like represents Richard and their life together and like obviously all that's been damaged now and it's really having to bring up all this stuff. And it's like if she'd have just explained that like to the other women and to like us as viewers and things and been that little bit softer about it, it would have been fine. But it's because she keeps just being like, oh, you know, I've got this house stuff and like John doesn't understand and this, that and the other, and it makes her sound so arrogant.
Yeah, it makes her sound prissy, like she's a rich woman bitching about having to do work on her second, you know, massive home.
Yeah.
And actually, in this scene, you kind of come to understand that all of this has been prompted by the shedding of the physical objects from Bluestone Manor, where she literally said, I couldn't bring myself to kind of go through things manually because it was so painful. And now that process of kind of throwing things out and catharsis has made her think about stripping things back emotionally. And it's like that people would so understand that.
Yeah, it's not such an abstract thing that people don't get it. Like even people who haven't gone through that kind of loss would understand and empathize. And if she would just be this warm, open person that she was in this life coach's office, I think she would get on so much better and people like Tinsley would be more willing to open up to her.
Even Tinsley, I'm sure, has gone through a breakup where she's had to move things out of someone's space. Whether that's a suitcase worth, whether that's, you know, a whole van load of stuff, it's painful. It's hard to do.
It is. And I just think it's so frustrating that it's like she can acknowledge it, but she thinks because she's acknowledged it, it makes it excusable. And it's like, I always have this theory in life with stuff where it's like something might be understandable, but it doesn't make it excusable, especially when it comes to treating people badly.
Yeah, I think so. And I think everyone can have like rogue events. Like you can do one-off things where you think, where you've coped badly with something, or, you know, everyone fucks up. Everyone makes mistakes. But it's just like Ariana calling out Jax, like when it's such a clear pattern of like repeated behavior after multiple interventions on all sides, you know, that's no longer you making a mistake because you're in a bad place. That's the person that you are. And you need to now do some work on your fundamental character, you know?
Exactly. And I think it's such a good comparison as well. Like, Dorinda is just the female Jax.
Strong words.
Although maybe with probably less of a cold covert.
I don't know about that. Apparently there's lots of coke happening in Rony.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, to be fair. These women are on all the time.
They have energy that I could only dream of.
Same. And I mean, I am literally a 27-year-old with very few things going on in my life. And I was like, oh God, the effort required is too much. So the idea of trying to live this kind of a life at that age with that much life behind me, absolutely not. I need pharmaceuticals of some kind.
But maybe post-menopause we'll like discover a new lease.
That's true. I kind of always loved the idea of being like in my 60s and suddenly having like a second like adolescence.
Oh, so I was talking to my friends yesterday. We're doing like a weekly Zoom on Saturday, and I have a lot of friends who are older. So these girls are all like early 50s plus.
Amazing.
So we did like a Zoom with our little cocktails, and we basically decided at the end of it. Oh, the first thing that was embarrassing was I was in my pajama top, which I forgot about. My pajama top says, I just want some head in a comfortable bed. So I went on and they were like, Louisa, what does your shirt? And I was like, oh, sorry. And I was like, oh my God, don't tell my mother. So that was embarrassing. But over the course of the conversation, we concluded by deciding that when they're all widowed, we would all pitch in to a palazzo in Florence where we'd all have like our own room with a little ensuite, and then we'd have like a handyman called Giorgio who was handy for lots of things.
Can you count me in on this plan, please?
Yeah, of course. I mean, if they're, I guess this would be in like 20 years time, so if they're in their 70s, we would be what, in our 40s?
Yeah. Living the dream. I really fancy the idea of just like swanning around an Italian like villa in a nice robe with a pool.
Speak Castello to me. Oh, I don't want to talk about Castellos right now. It's a sore subject. So the ladies decide to go to a Russian bathhouse. Well, Leah decides to go to a Russian bathhouse.
I was going to say, I just love the level of no fucks she gives. Like, she hasn't tried to pander to these women or to put them in a setting that makes them more comfortable. She's like, no, fuck you all. You're coming downtown and I'm going to make you experience other bits of life.
Oh, I honestly, I couldn't wait to see how the ladies were going to react to this basement with, like, laminated maps of the Caucasus on the wall and, like, pickled horseradish vodka by the tankful.
And I mean, their reactions did not disappoint either. It was precisely what I thought was going to happen.
Tinsley sleeping with her hoops is utterly unhinged.
It is insane. I mean, I have like tiny silver hoops in like my other piercings, and even they're uncomfortable to sleep on occasionally. The idea that she sleeps with these great big fucking diamond hoops in is astonishing.
Wouldn't you just be terrified that it would like catch on something and you'd wake up in the morning with like a floppy earlobe and a pillowcase covered in blood?
I just don't understand. Unless she literally sleeps on her back like fucking Nosferatu, there is no way that she is not catching them.
I can actually see Tinsley just like hands crossed over her chest, just very still.
I imagine it's something Dale would have instilled in her from a young age, where it's like, if you lie on one side, you'll get wrinkles on that side and not the other one, so you have to sleep on your back.
I mean, that is true, to be fair.
Exactly. So I feel like it's something that she, like, Tinsley probably lies in a perfectly straight, rigid position and doesn't move throughout the night.
So the old aesthetics clinic I used to go to for my Botox, the woman could tell you what side you sleep on from looking at your skin.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Literally horrific. I went home and immediately ordered a silk pillowcase.
I've literally had my eye on one for so long because I'm also so conscious of it. Like, the side that I lie on, my eyebrow is thinner on that side, and I'm convinced that it's because of this.
Oh my God. Yeah, I tend to go to sleep on my back and then I tend to wake up on my side.
I can only really get comfy on my side, and I literally just sort of like roll from side to side all throughout the night.
I can also see Dale being like, a lady doesn't thrash about. Yes.
One lies perfectly still so their hair does not get messed up and their skin does not become wrinkled.
One lies perfectly still in waiting for their prince, their Chicagoan prince, to come and plant a kiss upon the forehead.
Fulfilling her full Disney princess fantasy.
Literally. So Dorinda and Luann are being so snobby about downtown in the car on the way down. And then Dorinda says she respects Leah because she's very upfront.
I knew that Dorinda would absolutely love Leah. And I think it is that thing, is like she's realised that it's a woman that she can't bully.
Yeah, so she's like, okay, you passed the test.
Yeah, exactly. Like that kind of weird Dorinda testing that she always seems to do with people.
Ramona seems to take pretty well to this spa, and I've just decided that I would fucking love to see like Ramona Does Russia as a spin-off. How good would that be?
So it is, I would genuinely just love to watch like a travel program with her where she's just thrust into these kind of like slightly underground experiences in different countries and just see what she makes of them.
Yeah, like a bad tourist.
But... yeah. She's not allowed 5-star glamorous anything. She has to do a full like local cultural travel experience.
Sorry, but Ramona on the Trans-Siberian Express is... how has no one pitched this? And then also, I think, because I reckon she'd be like, Russia, aren't they communists there? And then she'd go and it's like this super authoritarian state and everything's like very chic and glamorous, especially in St. Petersburg, and there's lots of fur coats, and she'd actually like really take to it. I could see her really vibing with Russia.
I can as well. I can see her being like very in her element, and I think she'd be incredibly ignorant to it before she went. Like, I can't imagine that she knows a great deal about the ins and outs of Russian culture. But I can imagine that she would actually thrive there.
I'm seeing my Russian friend tomorrow, which is exciting. We're going to go for a socially distanced walk along the river.
Oh, nice.
She is so fucking ballsy, right? I absolutely love Russians. I've always got on really well with them. And I think it's because they're so blunt and they will just tell you exactly what they're thinking. And so I texted her a few months back, right around the start of lockdown, because I knew that she was heading back home to go and stay with her mum for a bit. She just had a baby. And I was like, hey, you know, what's up? She WhatsApped me back a picture. She was being detained at the border.
Okay. Oh, my God.
So she had the balls to send me a picture of, like, the office where she was being kind of held with the guards. Obviously they didn't see that she was taking the picture, and then she photoshopped a wanted picture of her like baby onto the wall. And she was just like, yes, I don't know why they pulled me over. I guess Vanya has done something to annoy the authorities. And I was just like, that is so chic to be getting detained by Russian guards and to be like stealthily sending me pictures on WhatsApp where you're making a joke about them wanting to imprison your newborn.
Oh my God, I truly just aspire to have that level of like so few fucks to give.
Honestly, if anyone kind of approached me at any kind of border, I think my heart would stop beating so quickly that it would just fall out of my mouth.
Literally same. Like, I do not do well with confrontation, authority, anything of the above. Like, I would let you expect to take anything you want. I don't care. I'll give you anything.
Ramona is talking about her décolletage and how it gets kind of crepey if you don't pay attention to it. And she makes, like, a subtle dig at Sonia as well.
Oh, and she's like, oh, yeah, you know, Sonia's is all, like, wrinkly around here. And it's like, ugh, but look at mine. Look how great I look. And then she does this thing where she goes... and just looks in the mirror and is just like, I pick myself up.
It's like body posy goals.
Obviously. I know.
However, do you have to preclude it with like bringing another woman down?
I know. And that was the thing. It was like, she could have so been on it. And to be fair, it's an area that I always neglect whenever I'm doing my skincare routine. So I will now always remember it because of Ramona. But I just don't know why she had to dig at Sonia while she did it.
Oh, don't. You know, I started panicking about my neck over lockdown, like for some weird reason. I can't remember what it was. I think I saw like a screen cap of 90 Day Fiance, and there's this woman with like the most awful neck, And then I started freaking out about mine. And I was like, oh my God, I've neglected it for so long. And now I'm just extending my entire skincare routine down to include it. So now I'm going to have to go fully into my décolletage as well.
I know. It's basically going to be a full top off, like belly button upward situation from now on.
Protect the torso.
Yeah. It must be saved at all costs.
Oh, honestly, so they get into the sauna and seeing them in their little white bell hats cooped up in that little wooden room, oh, it just made my heart sing. I can't even explain why it brought me so much joy, but I was beaming to myself in my room.
I literally love this. And I think it was like seeing them all wearing something so silly. But I also love that they obviously picked like Leah's sheer bucket hat apart. And yet here they all are in this fucking sauna in these little bell huts.
And I just liked it when Ramona and Sonia were like, you look like you're in a photo shoot at the same. I don't know, it was just cute. I'm going super soft over the course of this. Like, I read an article about, you know, some people who'd been married for 40 years and then the husband died, and I cried this morning. And I'm not like this, and I'm not due on my period for another 14 days, so I don't know why this is happening to me.
It's just not having the outside world jading you and making you loathe the humans. You've almost forgotten that they're all as terrible as they are, and you start to think like, oh, maybe they're not so bad.
Oh, you're so right. I haven't been around men for so long that I'm starting to give them all the benefit of the doubt again, which is not a good place to be at.
Dangerous territory to stray into.
Massively. And then Dorinda calls the Turkish spas a Hamas. Yeah.
And she says it with such fucking confidence, like she's showing off that she knows what they are.
Oh, I just, it would just be, just the fact that it's like a literal terrorist group.
And you can always count on Luann to correct her, though.
Yeah, Luann is the most worldly.
She is. She's so cultural and knowledgeable.
So there are some bare-chested Russian men standing and waiting with their bouquets of platza leaves after the ladies get out of the schwitz.
These women's eyes just lit up at the sight of these men. You could tell they were not sold on this spa experience until they stepped foot through that door and they were like, this is it, this is why I'm here, everything else is forgiven.
It was pretty erotic.
I fucking loved the part where Sonia was just like, I think I'll try S&M after this.
Yeah, like Sonia hasn't, come on. Come on.
Well, I imagine she's kind of strayed into the very sort of the tame areas of it, the kind of stuff that it's acceptable to sort of discuss with your girlfriends and it be a bit raunchy, but not so far where she's literally like in full bondage gear.
Yeah, like maybe have like a little paddle or something.
Yeah. Except it'll probably be made of like fucking silk or something.
Of course. It would be like Coco de Mer or Avant Provoque. I've never gone with any Russian guys.
Maybe that's another one you need to add to your repertoire.
Yeah, or I don't think I've been with any Eastern Europeans. Oh, I don't really, like, actually, I was in love with an Eastern European guy from my school when I was, like, 13, 14. And I just remember he was called Jakob. He was so good looking.
Incredible.
I mean, also like good looking at that age where I was just like, wow, he's got like skater boy vibes, like long shaggy hair and wore like jeans with chains on them. Oh. And I remember we were in biology class and we were doing dissections. We were dissecting a pig's kidney and I couldn't do it. It was honestly, it was so tough. And then he just went, don't worry, I do. And he just came over and like whacked my kidney in half. And I was just like, oh my God. He's perfect.
You always want a man that can split a kidney well.
It's not quite what I meant when I said destroy my internal organ. Oh God, I'm so sorry. I've been on Twitter too much. Anyway, Luann is in her element with these men. And Tinsley, of course, wants to sit out on the experience.
Yeah, she wants nothing to do with it. She doesn't want to participate, which is just to be expected. And I love that she tries to pass it off as being like, well, I'm allergic to a lot of things, so I'm probably allergic to this. And it's like, are you allergic to trees or grass, Tinsley? Probably not, so you're probably fine.
Tinsley is so the person that, like, no matter where she is in the world, she'll just order a Caesar salad.
Yeah. With no dressing and nothing on the side. Just pure salad for every meal.
Yeah. Oh, I really, this made me miss going to a Turkish spa and having like mint tea and baklava afterwards.
Oh God, we literally went to Turkey last year for a holiday and we had like a full like spa afternoon and it was phenomenal. I had one of those like big, where they do like the full body scrub things.
Oh.
With like the hot towels and everything. And then they've got those big loofahs that create loads of foam and they like rub this foam all over you. And honestly, it was phenomenal. I felt amazing afterwards. And you know, when you just sort of wistfully think of things, it's like, I don't know when I'll ever experience that again.
That sounds so nice. Was it like on the coast in Turkey or?
It was Antalya. So it was kind of like quite a touristy bit. We kind of went for a very, very last minute, like 5-star all inclusive kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because we were just like, I just want to sit by a pool and drink free cocktails for a week. And that's all I want. And I ate baklava basically for every meal. Like that I stopped getting real food.
What I love about Turkey as well, the apple tea.
Oh, I don't think I've tried it.
Oh, it's like, it's so sugary. It comes in granules. And like, it must be so bad for you, but you just dissolve them in hot water and it's like this super sweet apple tea. It's so nice.
Oh, that sounds incredible. I'll definitely have to try some next time.
So they go into a little room adjacent in the spa and how good did this food look?
I even made a special note just for how good this food was.
Those chips with just mushrooms on top. I was like, yes.
I'm usually like a big mushroom fan, but even I was looking at those and like, there was just like drool filling the corners of my mouth. You know, you look at like a really good meal and you're like, oh God, what I would do just to be sat at that table.
Oh, and I bet they all just kind of picked at it half-heartedly. It's so upsetting.
Although there was a scene later on after the little, like her and Dorinda's little tiff where Ramona was just frenetically shoveling mushrooms into her mouth.
Strong mood.
Yeah.
So Leah kind of says that they need to work through the orchard trip. And Dorinda's just like, I acknowledge it.
Yeah. And again, this classic, I'll acknowledge it, but do nothing to make it right.
Yeah, and so at that point, Ramona kind of, I guess, decides to step in when it's clear that Dorinda isn't going to apologise of her own accord or whatever, try and make amends. So Ramona decides to confront her and things just immediately start going downhill.
I mean, it sort of unravelled so rapidly. And it is that thing, like, Dorinda's just so immediately on the defence. Like, as soon as even Leah mentioned it, and Leah, who she gets on really well with, as soon as Leah even just mentioned the trip, you could see it was like she gets this like mean look in her eyes and she just starts to deflect it back at anybody and anyone.
Yeah, she's just bouncing it back to them. There's no kind of actual resolution. And then just as a side note, because it kept kind of bouncing around to the ladies' different faces, kind of showing their reactions. Like, for some reason, this didn't register with me before, but Tinsley's eye makeup in this presumably very humid underground spa environment just looked so out of place and heavy and like uncomfortable.
I just can't believe that anybody would turn up for a full spa day with full makeup on. Like, I probably wouldn't even go for like a mascara or an eyebrow or something. I just think I'm here to get fully pampered. Like, I don't need to have this on. I need my skin to be able to sweat and breathe and be clean.
Yeah, because isn't it just going to clog up your pores? She must have been in that sauna with full makeup.
Yeah, and then you just think, well, surely that's just worse for your skin.
It's so strange.
I just can't fathom it. I've never really been one of these people, though, that can't go out without makeup on. Like, I kind of just don't really care all that much.
No, I'm exactly the same. Like, I like wearing makeup. It's fun, but, you know.
No, I'm the same. And it's like, obviously, more power to people who feel much more comfortable with it on or whatever. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, more power to people who love wearing makeup every day and stuff like that. But for me, I just can't be bothered. So I just find the idea of like going into this kind of spa setting with like such heavy makeup, like this wasn't like a light coverage or something, this was heavy like night out makeup, and she, I just don't understand it.
Smoky eye. She had a full smoky eye.
I mean, I can't even do that for a daytime, like.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's her eyes always look so heavy, and they always look like they're kind of being weighed down by themselves.
Yeah, and I think the eyelashes don't help. Like, you can tell that she has that kind of like false eyelash eye, where her eyes always look slightly hooded and like sleepy.
So they don't really resolve anything. They come to a ceasefire again. I always like the kind of recurring war on terror sort of expressions. You know, we had Hamas, we had the ceasefire. I think Sonia at the end says something about like Russian geopolitics. That was like a throwaway comment, which I quite enjoyed.
And I do, and I think it's that thing, like, Dorinda might have put down her weapons with Tinsley, but she's definitely just, like, pointing them at Ramona now. You can tell that this grudge is here, it's burning, she's not going to let this shit go.
Yeah, the safety might be on for now.
Yeah.
And then we go to Leah's apartment, and Leah's little sister comes by her place, and we learn that Leah is dating a man who owns a pitta place, who's apparently very wealthy as a result of this pitta place.
I love that she calls him Peter Chip.
We learn that she's taken a sexy selfie with a strategically placed
pita bread.
And he screenshotted it and sent it to her, thinking he was passing it on to a friend. Now, can I hear you say red flag?
Yeah, I mean, this is a humongous fucking red flag. I'd love to know the timeline as well. Like, was this something that he literally got in seconds later and tried to send it on? Or was this something like he did later? I mean, neither matters, just purely for my own anthropological research on this specimen. But for me, that would be it. That would be the end of the road with that relationship.
That's yeah, it's just like a trust thing.
Yeah, and I can't believe she was just like, oh, well, you know, I like weird guys. I'm like, that's not weird. That's disrespectful. There's a difference.
Yeah, she's like, well, I like quirky, ugly men.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, I don't like dating hot guys. I'm not really into them. I really like the ugly ones.
So I, look, obviously I like hot guys, but we have had this conversation before where a lot of conventionally attractive men, they're lazy and they're too full of themselves, and being hot is like nice, like good for you, okay, like pleased, but it's not an achievement, you know? You won the genetic lottery, that's it.
Yeah, it's like you haven't personally accomplished anything. Like, I'd much rather have somebody who's like lower down on the looks chart but is like incredibly kind and funny and also has like a really good work ethic, and they're really generous and sharing, and they've got like a really good like head on their shoulders and a really mature, developed emotional sense, than somebody that's just like some hot douchey guy. Like, hot douchey guys have their place in the world and that's fine, but this ain't it.
Yeah, hot douchey guys are fun for a night, but yeah. It's like if you enter into a relationship with someone, it's like puppies aren't just for Christmas, you know? Yeah. Like, they might be super fun to begin with. You want to play with them all the time. You know, you want to keep them in your house and like, you know, never go out because you just want to stay inside and like play with them. But eventually, like, they're going to get older. They're going to get a bit slower, a bit fatter. You're still going to have to be there for them, you know.
Feeding them and taking care of them.
Yeah. Be up after them.
I think intelligence
and a sense of humor are the most important, because at the end of the day, those things don't age.
Yeah, 100%. I'm so with you on that one. That's kind of like my two main checkpoints as well.
And also, I'm too seduced by just charismatic people. Like, I genuinely don't care what you look like. If you're confident and you're funny and you're charming, like, that's what gets me. And I always think about, like, if I was a guy, like, I wonder what I'd be like. And I think I probably wouldn't be very good looking. I think I get away with things a lot more as a girl, because you can just, like, slap on a load of makeup, you know?
Yeah.
But I reckon I'd be one of those guys that was just, like, very good at, like, talking. And so I'd always be, like, weirdly batting above where I should be because of it.
I love that as a mood. I think I'd be exactly the same as well, to be fair. It's like, I'm so into the sort of charming, charismatic thing as well, where it's like, I think a good personality can boost somebody so far up the attractiveness scale. It's not even funny. And I think I'd be the same, where it's like, yeah, probably not much to look at, but I can fucking back it up.
Yes. And I also really liked where she's like, but I want to be the beauty, so I want a beast.
Yeah.
Which also appeals to my sense of, like, I don't want to be competing with someone that much, do yeah. I? Or do I? Maybe that would keep things interesting. I don't know. Maybe I like the challenge.
Yeah, but it's also that thing as well. It's like, I think I prefer being, like, the hotter one as well, though, because then it's like, oh, you never feel quite as insecure. I was like, this is fine. You know that you're doing well here.
So her sister relays that there's still kind of a very tense family environment at home.
I know, and I do feel quite bad for Leah that it's obviously had such, like, a knock-on effect just from this one decision that she's made.
Yeah, I mean, Leah seems to connect the dots here that she uses some of that kind of quite outlandish behaviour, possibly as a way of getting her mother's attention or as a means of getting a reaction out of her, and she kind of links that back to what she was doing when she was a teenager.
And I do love this level of, like, self-awareness that she has as well.
Were you a well-behaved teenager?
I was to a certain point, and then I kind of went through, I was probably between the ages of about 16 and, like, maybe 19, where I just kind of did that classic, like, off the rails, like, stopped trying really hard at, like, college and things like that, and didn't go to uni, and I was just, like, went out, like, 3 or 4 times a week, and I never wanted to be home and fought a lot with my parents and stuff, but I was like, I always had like a really, really good relationship with my parents, like regardless. So I think they kind of just let me go and be a bit of a delinquent because they knew I needed to get it out of my system.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were always really good about stuff like, oh, like, we always just want to know where you are. Like, we don't care, like, if you're staying out or that kind of thing. Like, we'd rather just know. And then if you ever need picking up or you need to come get you, we'd rather just come get you than you struggle to get back or be in like a position where you don't feel very safe and stuff. So I was always really grateful for that.
It's funny, it actually sounds like both our parents had a very similar kind of attitude, because that was the same thing with mine. They were always just like, you know, we want to trust you. And like, as long as the trust is there, that's what matters. And like, my dad did used to come and pick us up from town. You know, I mean, he was an insomniac anyway, so it wouldn't bother him to come and get us at like 1, 2 a.m., whatever. But I think what they wouldn't have abided by is like me really going behind their backs.
Yeah, I was exactly the same. And same with my mum as well. My mum was always up at like 3, 4 in the morning. It's like still just like working or reading or watching TV or whatever. So she was always like, if you can't get a taxi or anything, like just say and I'll come and get you. I don't want you to just be like stuck and wandering home or whatever. And yeah, same thing. They were just like, as long as you're always up front with us, it's fine, which has been really nice because it makes me a much more like honest person.
Yeah, I think so. And I think as well, just because somehow I always managed to get good grades in school, like I think that gave me a lot of leeway in other areas, you know, because yeah. They sort of knew that I was on top of things. So if I wanted to go off and do this or that, or, you know, I remember going out like sometimes, you know, very close to my exams and just being like, no, like I'm pretty sure like it'll be fine. And yeah, they kind of took my word for it. So that was nice.
Yeah, and mine was the same as well. It was like when I was doing my GCSEs, like our school did a ski trip to Vermont. And then it was like we went and spent like 4 days in Vermont and then 3 days in New York. And so like everybody else in my year group, their parents like, you can't go, it's too close to your exams. Cause I think like our first exam was like a week after we got back. And my parents just like, it's fine, just go. Like there's nothing that you can do in a week that's gonna change everything. So just go and have fun and have that experience.
Yeah, that's good. I'm down with that.
Yeah, me too. It's much more, I think it's my preferred method of parenting.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, teenagers are going to fucking rebel against you no matter what you do. And actually, I think sometimes the more strict you are, the more off the rails you're going to go. May as well just manage that risk and give them a degree of freedom so they don't feel the need to go and, you know, snort coke in a club bathroom. They might just drink too much in a field one day.
And I do find as well, like the friends that I've had that had much, much stricter parents, they went much further off the rails. And I think as soon as they went to uni and stuff, like they went like full binge drinking and that sort of thing because they'd never had that kind of freedom.
Oh yeah, massively, massively.
So I just think that's like an interesting perspective. It's nice to just, like have that trust as well. I think it's kind of good for like a developmental teenager to be trusted.
Yeah, yeah, because I think a lot of parents don't give people the benefit of the doubt in that sense, especially at that age.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, Leah kind of has this as well, where she says like, oh, I always tell my mum everything, and like even things I probably shouldn't. And that was also me as a teenager, or just like as an adult as well. It's like, I just tell my parents everything.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, my mum knows about every single aspect of my life, and you know, she's fine with it. I don't, some people think it's really weird, like, oh, your mum knows about like your dating life, or you know, who you're sleeping with, or whatever. And it's like, well, yeah, she's my mum, you know.
No, I'm literally exactly the same. Like, my mum knows more about me than pretty much anybody else on the planet. And it's really, and I think it's a non-judgmental place for me as well.
Yeah, and it's not like, oh, my mum's my best mate. Like, it's not that. It's different, but it's just transparency.
It is, absolutely. And I much prefer it.
So we go to Ramona's, where she's having kind of ladies round for drinks. Now, I was quite horrified by how small Ramona's kitchen looks.
I can't get over this. It was like, do you remember when Carol was on the show and she had that like phenomenal looking apartment, but the kitchen was like four cabinets and that was it?
The kitchen, which she turned into a study.
Yeah. And I just can't get over this thing. I guess maybe it's like a different culture thing in New York, where you eat out most of the time, so having a big kitchen's not as important. But I could not function. I couldn't even make toast in that kitchen. It would drive me insane.
No, exactly. It was too cramped. And the fact that there were multiple people in there as well was very stressful to watch. So Ramona's like, I love to be a catalyst for females networking and getting together. And as per always, as her friends are like filtering in, they all look exactly the same.
Yeah. It was such like a robo clone thing, wasn't it?
Apart from Elise, who was the only brunette in town.
I actually like Elise more and more the more that she's on screen.
I really like her, and I especially enjoy that she was saying she likes to tease Ramona, because Ramona very much straddles the whole like virgin whore dichotomy. You know, she'll kind of play it really coy, but then the next minute she'll be sort of laughing about her exploits.
I know, and I thought that was such a good little thing, and it's kind of, it's always there with everything that Ramona does. It's like, she likes to talk about it, but only when she's in the mood for it, and every time anybody else does it when she's not in the mood, she's like, oh, it's so déclassé.
Yeah, it's like, oh, if I bring it up on my terms, but then she'll kind of act really prudish and horrified when anyone else.
I know, and I just loved Elise's fucking balls to just go and rummage through Ramona's bedside drawers.
I know, I also loved it when she was like, oh yeah, the Wall Street guys used to take their strippers to that bathhouse. I think this is why she reminds me of Carlton. Like, she's got kind of like a subtle, well, maybe not so subtle, but she's got quite a kinky vibe about her.
Yeah, 100%. And she's got that sort of like slightly like dark undertone to everything she says, where it's like a little bit of humor. Excuse me, a little bit of humour and a little bit of kind of danger about her. I can't think of a better word for it, but I just really like her. I think she's great.
She's almost got like English adjacent humour, where she's quite cynical.
Yeah, and she's got that very sort of like straight-laced, deadpan kind of delivery of things.
Yeah, I like Elise. I'm liking her. So Dorinda just starts kind of railing against Ramona. The golden girls of the upper side don't really know how to process what's happening. Sonia turns up in a very strange outfit.
It's a very strange outfit. And also that fucking buzzer on Ramona's door is so aggressive. It was like going off and I was like, I couldn't live with that.
Yeah, you would think that she has like a doorman that would ring up.
Yeah. Maybe there's a doorman that lets her in, but then they have to ring the doorbell themselves.
Oh my God. So when I lived in London, one of my best friends from school was studying medicine. And she ended up renting a room from this guy who was on her course's flat. So the guy on the course, his parents had bought him this flat. I think it was like a 2 or 3 bed. And then he was like, oh, I don't like it. So they were like, oh, well, just find some people to rent it out to. And they bought him another place. Okay. And so I went for a house party, or it was like a dinner. And I obviously did classic student thing. I went to the corner shop. It was in Southwark, so I didn't like necessarily put two and two together because there's also some like super like dodgy bits of Southwark. Yes. Went to the corner shop, got my wine, got put it in a little plastic bag. You know, I was like walking along in my little like jeans and my anorak, and it was raining. And then I remember looking at the address, looking up at this like huge skyscraper on the Thames, and being like, "Well, my Google Maps is definitely saying that I'm here," and being like, "This can't be right." And so I double check the address with her. She's like, "Yeah, yeah, that's it." So I'm like, "Okay." So I go in with my like corner shop Echo Falls wine. And there's a concierge behind like a beautiful, you know, like those front desks that are made of backlit geode.
Oh, yes.
That. And he's like, "May I help you?" And I'm just like, "Yeah, I'm here to see," blah, blah, blah. I gave him a name and he was like, "One moment, mum." And he like rings up and like buzzes me in. And it was insane. This was like a multi-million pound flat. And I was like, "How much are you renting this room for?" And she was literally like, "Oh, like £300 a month." I was paying more than double that in Haringey, in like this absolute dump of a house.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this guy had just been like, "Oh, I don't like, you know, the view," or whatever. And so his parents had went off and bought him another multi-million pound flat. It was insane.
That is wild. Absolutely wild.
And then she got to live there for 2 years for like next to nothing.
Oh, what a dream. I'd have never moved out.
I know, yeah. You had to like literally evict me by a wrecking ball.
It's like the equivalent of having like a rent controlled apartment.
Oh God, yeah. So, so good. Oh. So Dorinda says Ramona likes people's misfortune.
Oh, so this was a little... such a little like sneaky little dig thing as well with the, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the German word, I'm going to leave that to you.
Schadenfreude.
That one. I looked at my sort of phonetic, like the way that I'd written it down phonetically, and I was like, no. And it's like, you don't wish them ill but be happy if something bad happens to them, and it was just so savage and uncalled for.
Such a German sentiment. I can say that as a German.
I mean, to be fair, there is plenty of people that I would also apply this to.
Oh, I've experienced this all the time. Look, basically, we just call it karma, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny because the camera keeps kind of cutting to all of these different people, and there's just like this circle of dead-eyed blondes all around them, just kind of like trying to process what the hell is going on as tensions continue to rise.
You can see they just don't understand anything that's happening.
So Dorinda, Sonia and Elise decide to leave and they get caught up in the hallway. Can you imagine living in one of these flats, by the way, and having to put up with this? Like, especially considering you've paid multi-millions to be there.
I was going to say, I literally wrote this down as well. And I was like, I would be on, if I was Ramona, I would be mortified that this was happening in my corridor where my neighbours could see. But also equally, if I was a neighbour, I'd be pissed as hell that my fucking extortionately priced condo was being disrupted by these like screeching women.
And so Dorinda's waterworks start coming out. The thing that kind of annoys me, right, about Dorinda is she really wants this very kind of unfettered, unconditional support. But she doesn't seem to realise that she could get that support. But it's the aggressive behaviour that's triggering all of the bad sentiments to her in the first place. Ramona wouldn't be picking a fight with her if she hadn't have gone in on Tinsley. You know, it's just domino. Yeah,
exactly. And it's that thing of like, not letting, like, not making herself culpable for anything that she's done. Like, she can't connect the dots, or she's choosing not to connect the dots and see that she's actually the catalyst that's causing all of this.
Where do you think it's going to go?
I think this is going to rear its head again. I think we haven't seen the end of the Ramona Dorinda fight. I think it's going to come back up to bite them both in the arse. But I think it's possibly kind of what we said at the start, where it's like, it's possibly is that this is where teams are starting to be formed. And I think it'll maybe end up with Dorinda and Ramona on the same side, but kind of begrudgingly.
Yeah, I wonder if Leah going off the rails is gonna...
Yeah, I think it might sort of push the groups into, like, two separate camps. Because I think Luan and Tinsley will defend her. And then I think Sonia will just be gleeful that she's not the main drunken mess of the of the situation. And I think... I can't work out what Dorinda's response will be, so I'm intrigued to see that.
Yeah, because Dorinda also likes to pull this whole, you know, I'm really classy, I'm really elegant, you know, ooh, downtown. Like, she has shades of Luan with that, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I've just realised as well, we did also just skip over the part where Sonia came into that apartment clutching that dress for Ramona.
Oh, what happened?
Oh my god, dude. Oh, so
did I completely miss out on this?
I think so. So Sonia came in with this fucking dress for Ramona from her collection and just loudly announced to the whole room where she was just like, oh, you couldn't get the zip up on the other one, so I've brought you the size large instead. And like, so, Ramona was like sort of being like, oh, it's fine, yeah, I don't mind. Like, oh, I might even need an extra large, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, oh, and Sonia went, oh, I tried it on, so you'll definitely be able to zip it up, this is fine. And Ramona was like, well, yeah, because we're the same size. And Sonia was like, well, no, I mean, I'm a medium and you're a large, so we're not.
I actually did miss that.
And we also get this thing of apparently Ramona had told Sonia that she needed to lose 10 pounds at the bathhouse.
I did like that Sonia was like, I'm beautiful with weight on, bitch.
Yeah.
I do actually think Sonia looks better, a bit more filled out. I think she can look kind of gaunt otherwise, and actually she's looking healthier.
I think so as well. I think it sort of, it does wonders for like her skin and her face when she's got just that little bit extra weight on her, because I think when she goes too thin, it sort of, it doesn't carry well on her face and it actually makes her look older.
Oh my god, I saw a picture of Bethany the other day where she just looked very, very skeletal.
Oh, really?
Eyes were very sunken. It wasn't a good look. You see, I think Bethany now, like, yeah, I get that she's skinny girl incarnate and whatever, but I really think she needs to kind of pad herself out a bit, because...
Yeah. And I mean, it is, I think Bethany's always been on the thin side, but I don't know how much of it's, like, genetics and how much of it's, like, effort. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
But, I mean, she has always been, like, so thin.
Yeah, like, I get that it's wrapped up in the brand as well, like, whatever happens, but I was quite shocked at this picture. I'll try and find it and send it to you.
Oh, God, I'm scared.
She looks almost sort of unrecognisable.
Oh, my God. But I must say, I'm not missing her as much as I thought. I mean, I'd have still liked to see her in the series more, like, again, but I don't miss the way.
If she'd have stayed on, I think it would have been good. But I actually haven't really thought about her that much.
No,
that sounds so weird. Like, I'm just lying in bed at night. But yeah, there's not really been a Bethany-shaped hole.
No, I think Leah's filled it perfectly. And yeah, I agree. Like, I'd have liked to have still been on it, but I'm also not missing her because she's not. I'm just very excited for next week's Hurricane Leah episode.
Oh, yeah. So this looked kind of wild. I loved their little star head pieces. That made me really happy. I thought that was super cute. I love it when Ramona gets embarrassed around, you know, the sort of New England elite.
I know. And you can tell this is like the kind of the people that she wants to impress and that she wants to come across as like a certain way. It's like being in that multi-million dollar mansion all over again.
And that she's surprised every time it happens.
I know. And it's like, you keep inviting these women. Just stop bringing them to things if it's always so bad.
To film at these like third party locations. Look, I would watch the New York women just in a house all together. You know, I'd watch them quarantined, to be quite honest. Like, they don't need outside influences.
Imagine what a series that would be, the housewives in quarantine together.
I think that would be great. Like, obviously grateful that we can transplant them into these kooky locations, you know. Apple Orchard, Russian bathhouse. But genuinely, I would just watch them all just absolutely going mental within a confined space. So, yeah, I don't know why she thinks that this is going to have some kind of different outcome every time she does it.
Oh, God, love her for trying, though.
So if you want to follow Faith, you can do so on Instagram at Faith_Elizabeth, Faith spelt with two H's in that. And you can check out her website on www.faithrichardson.co.uk. If you want to follow me, I'm on Twitter at Louisa G. Rogers, and you can check out my website at www.louisarogers.net. Very interesting name. We really pushed the boat out on our
name. Didn't we? We really flexed our creative muscles with those.
At least you got a .co.uk. I feel like .net is so retro.
I know.
The net. My dad still calls it the net.
Oh God, I love that. It's so 90s. It's like, oh, you're on the net, are you?
Are you online? Just assume that everyone is online at all times.
Yeah, it's weirder if you're not these days.
It's weirder if you're not. We'll speak to you next week.